You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iOS, Windows, Android, Kindle, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the journey!
I am your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
Before we get into our topic, we would like to address something that you've probably heard elsewhere on Trek.fm this week, and that is the passing of Cliff Bull.
This is a director whose career has spanned from TNG... through Voyager, and did he do any Enterprise?
No, he did 25 episodes on TNG, 7 on Deep Space Nine, and 10 on our beloved Voyager.
Yes, so we wanted to take just a short moment to acknowledge the work that he did on Voyager, because this is sort of a thing that we're doing throughout the whole network. Tristan and I realized we've talked about these episodes a lot already, so this is not going to be an in-depth discussion necessarily, just more of a reminiscing, I suppose.
One of the reasons why we have talked about all these episodes a lot is because they're really, really good. I mean, he has a great lineup of episodes that he directed. And just quickly, I'm just going to list them off. Cold Fire, Meld, Life Signs, Tuvix, False Prophets, Future's End Part 2, The Q and the Gray, Extreme Risk, Bliss, and Dark Frontier.
That is a darn fine lineup. Those are some of my favorites.
I know. This is like right off the bat, you have two of my extreme favorites with Tuvix and The Q and the Gray. I mean, those right there would be enough for me to go, we need to talk about Cliff Bull.
Right? But then we've got all these others here. I'd say Future's End Part 2. That's one of the most popular Voyager two-parters. That's definitely a must-have in a rewatch for sure. Cold Fire is actually kind of a nostalgic favorite of mine. It's not necessarily because it's an amazing freaking episode, but I like that Kes burns things and
Tuvok's face is just like, blah.
Yeah, she boils Tuvok, and then there is that horrid scream, which you either love or hate, or love to hate, as I do.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, that was a scream that kind of curdles your blood, but at the same time, you're like, maybe we could have done take two on that one.
The thing is I don't know if it's so bad it's good or if it's so good it's bad. I mean, that is a chilling, horrific scream, which you want when somebody is genuinely afraid, but wow.
It can get kind of crazy, and something else that's crazy is he had a lot of other Star Trek connections before he came to Star Trek. He directed William Shatner in T.J. Hooker for like 17 episodes. And he also directed Avery Brooks in Spencer for Hire.
Hmm.
There's also some other geek connections with The $6 Million Man and MacGyver and The X-Files. He directed tons of episodes in those shows.
Yeah.
And this guy was all over the place, had... You know, like, he had kind of a love and hate relationship with the Star Trek franchise. Like, he didn't really like his time on Deep Space Nine. He loved it on TNG, and then he kind of found a home again on Voyager, from what I hear. I am by no means a Cliff Bull expert, but you hear some people say, oh, yeah, I loved working with him, and then you have people like Will Wheaton say, yeah, he was really condescending to me.
Well, I don't know a whole lot about that whole conversation myself, so why don't we not go there? But
I don't feel like we need to go there, but the thing is that one thing that I really appreciate is when your work speaks for itself, and these episodes are amazing.
Right. So even if he was a condescending jerk to Will Wheaton, and maybe he was and maybe he wasn't, he still produced some of our absolute favorites and the finest in Star Trek, from TNG through Voyager.
He was 76 and passed away on February 15th of this year. Now that we've talked a little bit about Cliff Bull, we wanted to do something a little bit different because we wanted to save our costume episode, so that was just one cohesive episode because we could talk about it forever. And so instead,
we almost did.
And this week, we are going to do an Innocence rewrite. Innocence is the episode where Tuvok crash landed on a moon, and he all of a sudden has to be a caretaker for three children and three alien children, and while Voyager is looking for him.
Only there is, of course, the wonderful twist of Tuvok isn't babysitting just any ordinary kids. He's babysitting Mork and Mindy's kids, basically, because they are aging backwards.
They're aging bad. That's the big to do. That's the crux of the story. That's the twist and climax at the end. They're like, oh, holy crap, these aren't kids. She's actually 96 years old, and she just looks like kids, and they have Alzheimer's. That's why they can't remember how old they are.
Apparently. Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, nothing absolutely gives away the fact that these are not actually children until the very end when Tressa mentions that she has grandchildren that, oh yeah, you're old. And that is with, what, 2 minutes left in the episode?
Barely, yeah. Two minutes left in the episode. And that, I'm sure that's something that we'll talk about as we go through it. Let's talk about generalities first. Like, a lot of the times when we do a rewrite of an episode, it's not because we hate the episode, and we definitely don't do it because we love it. We're not going to rewrite Year of Hell, and we're not going to rewrite Threshold, but we are going to rewrite something that's kind of in the middle. That's our valley right there. That's our wheelhouse, is that we don't love it, we don't hate it. It's just kind of like, it could have been better. This is what we're going to do. And so, Char, what were your first reactions when you saw this episode for the first time?
For the first time, I was actually struggling to stay awake. I hate to admit it, but that was the truth. And part of this was because Voyager came on so late where I was living. It aired like at 10 p.m. on Sunday night before I'm supposed to go to school for the week. Oh, bummer. I watched it anyway. But this episode didn't strike me as good in any way when I was 14 and watching it for the first time. I found it incredibly boring. I thought, oh no, kids, this is not going to bode well. I didn't get a whole lot out of it. How about you?
I feel like so much could have been better. I liked the premise. I think it was a great premise. And there's so many episodes and so many movies that I see where I'm just like, you know what? That's a great story. That's a great premise. But I think it was poorly executed, and so much could have been better. And that's how I felt about Innocence, is that I like the idea. I like the concept of Tuvok being crash-landed on a planet where he has to take care of three children, or what we think are three children. Then we remember, oh yeah, Tuvok is a father. He is a seasoned father.
Yes.
Like, he's not just going to be awkward around kids because they're ill-behaved. He's going to know how to be a parent and how to take care of them. And I like that little reminder. I don't remember how he reacted the first time I saw it, but I was kind of like, okay, that episode happened. You know, that was...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, like, moving on, I'll see what happens next week. You know,
exactly.
I didn't have any negative feelings towards it. I barely felt anything towards it.
So you were really ambivalent.
Very much so.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I hated it, but maybe ambivalent is the word, because I really could not have cared any less than I did about this episode. Now, I've watched it a few times since, of course. I think you're absolutely on the mark when you say there is a really good story here. There's actually a couple of really good things this episode has going for it. The execution, however, kills it.
So, Char, how would you choose to execute?
Well, why don't I tell you what I would keep, and we'll go from there. I think there's two great themes that they've got going here, and the first is the diplomacy thing, where Janeway, Chakotay are talking about their first contact situations, exchanging stories, which is totally cute and ties into this whole thing with this new race of people that they are meeting for the first time and how very, really different they are in philosophy and all that. I think that stuff is good. It's just they really made it go long, and I would cut out about half of what we saw
yeah.
from that, as well as the other half of this story, which is the kid plot. And we really don't get to see what this is really, really about, or what it could be about, I guess, until the very end. And that is coming to the terms with the end of your life. I mean, that's a serious, very contemplative subject. But no, we are going to spend time trying to do a little bit of comedy where Tuvok is trying to discipline these kids in a Vulcan manner when they are not at all Vulcan. And granted, these were kids. They were not bad behavior at all. Just really, we had to do that instead of what could have been an incredible Star Trek topic.
Yeah, I never really thought about it that way. That's a good point, Char. I like what you say there, because that's a good Star Trek concept. Think about the TNG episode Half a Life, where once the individual reaches 50, they commit suicide so that they're not a drain on mm-hmm. the society, and this person has so much more life to live and so much more to contribute to society, but no, that's what his culture deems appropriate. No, granted, this is very different, but it's that same kind of life and death feel. Now, it's not like, oh, the universe is going to implode unless we, you know, unless we fix this quantum slip drive, you know, button. It's nothing like that. This could have been primetime real estate, storytelling real estate of what does it mean to die? What does it mean mm-hmm. to give up your life? Not so much voluntarily, because she was 96, Tressa was 96, but just to contemplate it, where yes, she had the lucidity at the end where like, oh yeah, I'm a grandmother, so it's cool. It's whatever, I'll pass, you know, it's fine. No, I wanted to see that moment where either there was that struggle where she kind of flipped back and forth between lucidity or yeah, like what you're saying. Just like analyze it. Think about it. Spend some more time on it. Yeah, keep going.
They really dropped the ball as far as exploring the depth of this, because come on, we all have to think about this, whether we want to or not. We are all alive, and it's inevitable that we're going to die. It's one of our greatest unknowns, and I think one of people at large, our greatest fears, because it's an unknown. And so there is a lot of unrest and peace and thinking about this topic. I would have loved to have had the group of kids. Yes, they get taken to the planet against their will, essentially. But then Tuvok is there. And they're like, help us get off of here. We're doomed to die. And, you know, we'll kind of go from there. And we will learn so much earlier that these are old kids, not actually children.
Yeah.
And I really think Tuvok is still the greatest candidate for this, because he could really help these people, these kids, I don't know what to call them anymore, these grandparents, I don't know. He could really help them come to terms with these final moments with Vulcan logic and discipline, and I feel like that would have been way more useful than seeing him try to sing to them and keep them still.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like you and I are kind of on the same page about where we would go with this, because as far as the kids, I'm just going to call them kids.
Yeah, fair enough. We've got to call them something.
as far as the kids concerned, I would like that too. I still like that Corin and Alani are taken away. I would keep that where they're taken away in the middle of the night, but Tressa and Tuvok explore each other's backstories a little bit more, where have her kind of slowly figure out, you know what, maybe there's more to this. I'm, you know, like, I'm have her say, you remind me of my grandson, and have Tuvok go, whoa, what do you mean? What do you mean? I remind you of a grandson.
Are you a compin?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah. Something that in fact, I would have that littered throughout, even when Corin and Alani were around, have them drop little hints throughout the episode where
yes,
it's kind of
totally.
Like, whoa, what? Like where Tuvok, he doesn't quite understand, like, maybe it's just a culture barrier. Alani's like, oh yeah, that's like that time that I spent on my honeymoon, you know, like, or you know.
Right, yeah.
Something not as obvious as what I'm saying, but, you know, like I said, just like have it weave a little bit more instead of just, bam, last 2 minutes, oh yeah, I'm 96.
Exactly, yeah, totally.
And so in that, maybe in the last act, like the fifth act, maybe even more, but like at least give us the fifth act where you have a moment between Tuvok and Tressa where Tressa's like, I am 96 and I'm just now remembering this, and have her go in and out of childhood and grandparents and say like, I don't know if I want to do this. Help me, Tuvok, you know, like help me figure mm-hmm. out what to do. I don't want to die, even though I know it's my time. And have Tuvok say, you know what, you're 96. I'm actually older than you. Maybe I can give you some perspective on this. I may not be a grandparent like you, but I have some perspective, and here's what I think. That same moment that you're talking about, like, let's have that moment instead of that last 2 minutes where Tuvok is like, yeah, I'll take you to the cave.
Yeah, abso-freaking-lutely. I don't know if I would save it till exactly the fifth act, though. I think I would stretch it out just a little bit.
Okay.
Dare I say it, I actually would want to see more of the kid plot than we actually saw. And I know that's a slippery slope with Star Trek and kids, but
yeah.
I actually felt like these kids could carry it and do a decent job with it. And if they had this material, I feel like it would just be such a better episode. And I would actually lead that up to that conclusion, but I would have her, like, that would be kind of more of the meat of it, where she would be scared and confused and then remembering and then accepting, like, she's going through all the five stages, basically.
Yeah. No, I like that. Yeah, go through those stages, you know, acceptance and ending everything like that, bargaining
right.
and whatnot. I like
mm-hmm.
that. And
yeah.
I would personally cut down on the B plot with the with Janeway trying to figure out how to trade with these people and everything like that. I mean, let's
mm-hmm.
I want to keep that to a minimum, because every single time I was there, I just felt like we were wasting time.
We were.
Let's go back to Tuvok on the planet. Let's not repeat ourselves with Tuvok on the planet like they did so many times. And let's not extend the B plot with Janeway and these aliens. So let's
right.
cut that down. Stop repeating ourselves. That way we'll have more time with the kids. And that way we can develop more things.
Yes, more meaningful content.
Yeah, more meaningful content. And one thing that I really wanted to see was a little bit stronger visuals. Like when he goes to the cave and he finds Corrin and Alani's outfits, and he finds one more so you know that it happened before, I wanted to see a field of outfits. I wanted to see a field of colored tunics and everything like that. Kind of like the moment in Waking Moments when mm-hmm. Chakotay sees the field of people sleeping.
Yeah.
You know that shot towards the end of the episode? I wanted
uh-huh.
to see that in the cave, but with tons and tons of little kids' outfits, because it would be creepy. It'd be absolutely creepy.
It would be this graveyard of empty suits.
Yeah, and so we'd be like, holy crap, they're killing children, and we would feel it inside, but then we would realize, oh, it's okay, it's natural, they're not kids, it's actually filled with grandparents and older people, and it's okay, it's a peaceful cave, not a cave of murder.
Yeah, the boogeyman is not in the cave, and he doesn't eat children.
Murder cave!
Murder cave! I love it.
Yeah, that's how I would treat it, like, cut down on the B-plot and add a little bit more guts to the kids.
Yeah, yeah. The whole diplomacy thing is good, but do we really need the tour of the whole ship?
Ah, I know. That bothers me so much. Whenever they do that, I was like, listen, I know the ship. I'm a viewer. I'm here every week. You know, like, I know what engineering looks like. I know what a transporter room looks like. You don't have to tell the new alien, because, in essence, when you're telling a new alien, you're actually telling the audience. We understand it all.
Right, yeah, that's kind of what it felt like, too. I just felt sort of like they were almost talking down to us in a way. We already know this. Who cares if they don't? Just
yeah.
put it in a different context. I saw what they were trying to get at. The difference of beliefs, and is this why you took me here first? Why? Does this seem like the most powerful thing to you? And blah, blah, blah. I get it, but again, poor execution. I feel like we could have gotten the same message across, and Janeway still could have pulled this off, but in a totally different manner.
Keep the scenes, but just cut them down, maybe. Like, maybe cut out the tour. And I love the outfits, and I love the costumes, and
I really do.
Like, I really like it. I thought it was unique. We didn't really see it before, and I mean, there could have been more variety between everybody, but,
of
you know, that's
yeah.
kind of always how it is with Star Trek, but yeah, I like the interaction, but just cut it down. Simplify. It was bloated.
Yeah.
That
it
was the
really
thing.
Was.
It was bloated.
It felt like they were padding the episode, and I thought, why? Why? When in the last 2 minutes you reveal what this episode should have been. Oh, I was so frustrated when I came to the end and started formulating this whole thing on what I would want to see different, and I just thought, guys, this could have been one of the best episodes of season 2.
Yeah, it really could have. And I know they were trying to save money by not showing the crash. And I like being thrown in the middle of things usually. And I'm like, oh, holy crap, what's going on? But the thing is that normally when we're thrown into a crash and we don't see the crash, it's much more hyped up. It's like we get thrown into it and there's an ion storm up above, and it's, or it's raining, or like somebody's giving CPR, and it's just like, oh God, no, it's not your
breathe,
time.
Damn it, breathe.
Damn it, Catherine, no. You know, it's
you
just.
You can't die.
Exactly. It's something like that. There's more emotion. Now, obviously, you can't do that with a Vulcan, but you can still have urgency with a Vulcan without relying on emotion. And it was just so casual when Bennett died. It was just like, oh, Bennett's on the floor. Tuvok goes over to him. And he knew he was going to die. That's why he had the stasis thing ready right at a moment's notice. Did you notice that? The moment he died, he hit the stasis device and put him in the tube. He's just like, yeah, he was going to die anyway. It's cool.
That was, speaking of creepy, that was definitely creepy. Like, wow, you saw this coming, didn't you, Tuvok? Ouch.
Also, the thing is that he leaves him there and puts the stasis field around, but then when they don't, like, he just disappears eventually.
Mm-hmm.
The kids, when they're camping, they're not camping next to a dead guy.
No, fortunately. Maybe Tuvok has enough good taste to where he's not going to keep the body around.
Yeah, so did he put it in another part of the forest, or did he put it into the shuttlecraft? But when they were working the shuttlecraft, he didn't see him, so all of a sudden, Bennett just disappeared.
I'm perfectly okay not knowing what happened to that, because, to be totally honest, I would have not had Ensign Bennett, whoever the heck he is, die at the beginning of the episode anyway, because who cares? Who was this guy? We never saw him, really. We didn't hear much about him. He's just some no-name dude who had to die. Don't care. Don't care.
Well, I understand why they did it, though, because they needed Tuvok alone. They needed this... a logic-filled, emotionless person handle these kids. It's protocol to have two people in a shuttle. You know, you're not supposed to be alone. Now,
true.
Granted, they've broken that rule before, like when Chakotay went on a spiritual journey and whatever. But at that same time, that way it shows a little bit more dire situation, and it gives the excuse of why he's alone. But because you can't have Neelix with him, because Neelix knows how to work with kids. And
you can't
have Kes,
true.
Because Kes is very maternal. You know, B'Elanna, I don't know how that would be. That would be an interesting dynamic.
She would have just slapped him.
Like, listen!
Shut up!
But yeah, so that's how I would change the opening. Like, I would change the opening by making a little bit more dire, a little bit more crazier, instead of just like, oh yeah, he's dead. And then beef up the kids' parts, make the cave more menacing, cut down on the trade negotiation plot, and also bring up I'm going to die much earlier into the episode. That's my overall sense of what I would do differently.
I think we've kind of brought both of our ideas to the table here and melded it into one better overall episode than what either one of us came up with. And I like it a lot, actually. I will disagree with you on the Ensign Bennett thing, though. I really don't care so much that you can maintain the protocol that he was there, but all you have to do is mention Ensign Bennett is dead. We don't have to see him. We don't have to hear from him. We don't have to do anything with him. He's dead.
What? No. How would that work? How would that work? Like, okay, so who's he going to say that to?
To Janeway or put it in.
But he doesn't talk to Janeway until the end of the episode. Oh. And so the entire time we're going to be thinking, why is Tuvok alone?
Oh.
And then if he mentions it just like to the log, you know, like Ensign Bennett is dead, we're going to go, where is he?
Okay, I think you got me. That's
like,
a good point.
Who's Ensign Bennett, and where's his body, and why
all
is
right.
he dead? And
all right, that's fine. He can die, and then he'll disappear. That's fine.
That's pretty much what they did. He literally disappeared.
We'll just stick with that. Okay.
Oh, that, and I would have Tuvok sing the entire 348 verses and extend the episode. I'm just kidding.
No, I think maybe over the credits that would have been really cool.
That actually would have been fun.
I like that idea. Like, release it with a bonus track to some soundtrack. I mean, that would have just be fantastic. Tim Russ, he's a singer anyway. Come on, guys. They really should have had him exploit that a little more.
I would have really enjoyed that, actually, hearing that over the credits. That would have been the first and only time that's ever happened in Star Trek, but that would have been cool.
Yeah. That's how I would have had it end, and that would have just been totally awesome. And if it were the only episode in all of Star Trek ever to have singing over the credits, then this is a very memorable episode for that reason alone.
Very much so.
All right, well, I think we have massively improved Innocence. And let's take a short little moment, talk about our sponsor.
Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
One last order of business before we close up shop this week. We have Colin Higgins from Melodic Treks to thank for letting us know that we've received not just one, not just two, but several reviews in the UK iTunes store since the last time we looked, and that was a long time ago. So we owe some long overdue shout-outs, and here we go. To Mr. M. Hurst, Colin himself, Flippy18 UK, Jarek, JamieFriend12, CrazyCat66, and Squeamalini for giving us 5 stars and writing us rave reviews all in the UK iTunes store. Hugs and kisses to you, mates. Thank you very much. And if you have left us a review in an international store that is not US, please let us know. And that way we can take a look and give you a shout out on the show. We would love to do that. So next week, what are we doing?
That's right. We are going to go back to our regular programming schedule, and we're going to talk about costuming in Star Trek Voyager. Until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!
He traveled through the windswept hills and crossed the barren fire plains. To find the silent months of Kirk, still unfulfilled, he journeyed home, told stories of the lessons learned, and gained true wisdom by the gear.